You're listening to the Laudable Podcast with Frank and Annalise. In this episode, Frank and I talk about a recent article in EMS One discussing PTSD and workers' compensation. Since it's Pride Month, we also talk about some issues that first responders who are part of the LGBTQIA+ community face and experience, including some input from three awesome individuals. This week, we also have our very first guest. We thank you for sitting down, listening to us, and hope that you enjoy what you hear. If you're listening on Anchor, be sure to leave us a voice memo about what you'd like to hear in the future and what you thought of the show. If you're listening on any other podcast streaming site, be sure to rate us and leave a comment. Thanks and enjoy the show.
What's up?
Nothing much. How are you? I did it right this week.
Practice makes perfect.
It does. So this week, we are going to be talking about Pride Month because it's June and Jude is Pride Month. This episode, we're specifically going to tie in first responder mental health to the Pride community. We're going to talk about some of the issues that LGBTQIA plus first responders face or have to deal with, like sexual harassment, offensive terminology, etc. Over the past week, we reached out to some members of the first responder community who are also lesbian, gay, or bisexual and asked them some questions on their opinions and experiences of being a first responder. So we want to thank Ashley, Michael, and Heather for their submissions and their comments.
And as I understand it, this week we also have a pretty special guest on. She's been an EMT for 6 years. A firefighter for 4, and she's Rose, who also happens to be a lesbian first responder, and your wife. Is that correct?
Yeah, she's also my wife.
Hey there, Rose.
Hi, guys. Long time listener, first time caller.
Welcome to the episode.
First
episode number 2.
Excited to be here. We're excited to have you.
Definitely.
So the first thing I want to talk to you guys about today actually goes a little off of our Pride topic, but still tied into mental health for first responders. There was an article that came out on June 5th. It was published in EMS One, and it's titled, Ohio Businesses Oppose Workers' Comp PTSD Coverage for First Responders. Essentially, the cliff notes of it are that officials on different like business bureaus in Columbus, Ohio, don't believe that PTSD should be granted under workers' comp, like coverage-wise, because there are no physical, like injuries or physical criteria, even though the DSM version of PTSD says that it's not part of the diagnosis.
Wow, that's crazy, and I can definitely see how that like rolls into like being a first responder. I mean, it's insane that for like employers at large, but definitely as a first responder, I feel like as far as civilian populations go, police, fire, EMS, 911 dispatchers, that sort of thing, and people that work in like a hospital, like emergency healthcare environment, definitely are probably the most at risk out of most civilian professions.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what, there are a few different representatives for that part of Ohio that were speaking back against this, but they've been going back and forth for 6 years, changing the criteria for what is considered to be workers' comp or not. I don't know if you have any thoughts, Rose.
As someone who has suffered and sometimes still suffers from the effects of PTSD, I can definitely see how there are some heavy frustrations when it comes to not being able to kind of seek help for your employment directly or your career directly affecting your well-being. And I totally agree that all the employers should file this under workers' comp, but I guess we'll see where this battle takes us.
What do you guys think the reason is for denying it? Do you think it's more of like worried about paying out like the actual workers' comp like payments for it?
I think that's exactly
I would say I would agree. I would say if it was more like something like if the policy was unique to first responders, it could almost be some more of that like stigma against PTSD. But I think in this like specific instance where it's like all employers, it definitely seems like follow the money and you'll see like where it goes, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. There were four business groups that were cited in the article as opposing this. They're the Ohio Chamber of Commerce, the NFIB Ohio, Ohio Manufacturers Association, and the Ohio Township Association. And there was actually a representative from the Manufacturers Association who said that, this is a direct quote from the article, emergency responders are not the only ones who undertake dangerous jobs, and it might be difficult to justify not doing the same for other professionals who seek equal treatment. Once a physical injury is no longer required, the potential inroads into the program are endless. He also cited increased costs as his other reasoning.
I think it's appalling that what he's basically suggesting is that it's like a slippery slope.
Right.
It sounds like he's basically saying that, oh, well, if we start allowing people to claim PTSD, how many people are going to take advantage of this?
You know? Right. I agree. Instead of
looking at the actual problem and consequences and what's going on.
Right.
I wonder too, how much information, like where they're, I'm sure they have statistics about this, but like the percentage of people that are actually reporting a desire for, like resources from their employer to take care of these issues. Like I said, like I've experienced PTSD myself, but I haven't actually thought that I should directly reach out to my employer for assistance. Like it was just something that I was like, I should probably see a therapist about this. So I did it on my own time. So I wonder like what the numbers might be like for people that are because of a stigma not reporting it, or maybe just don't think that it's an appropriate thing or what.
I think there's a lot of people too with, like in certain jobs that their insurance just doesn't support going to see a therapist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like out, like without that workers' comp, like that workers' comp is basically the safety net that they need to have the financial stability to go to a therapist.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This is true. Know?
And it's a direct result or consequence from the work you're doing.
Right.
For all other definitions, it falls under workers' comp. If you break your leg at work, it's workers' comp. If you injure something else at work, it's workers' comp. If you get this, it's workers' comp.
This actually reminds me of a few years back. There was a whole debacle with the military where they were refusing to pay out either like veterans benefits, like disability benefits, or to award Purple Hearts for members of the military that suffered from a traumatic brain injury where they didn't initially report it.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest issue with that was like, well, how do you initially report a traumatic brain injury when, like, traumatic brain injuries form days, weeks, months later and require, like, extensive scans and doctor's diagnosis to, like, prove? It's this huge, like, I feel like it affects both, like, the insurance community and, like, the clerical side of, like, the healthcare community, where mm-hmm. it's, like, there's a separation between, like, injuries that you can see and that are physical and injuries that where the scars are definitely deeper than just the surface.
Yeah, that's true.
Whether that be neurological or psychological.
One of the things that blew me away, I think the most about this article were all the comments I saw on it, which we all know comments are kind of
goldmine.
Subjective. Yeah, goldmine. But I want to share some of the ones I found because I thought they were interesting. I'm not saying that I agree or disagree or we agree or disagree, but these are some of the comments. One of them I think ties exactly into what we talked about last week, which was, it says, who do you tell? We all have stories, some worse than others, but there's really no help. Just deal with it and move on. Show your peers how tough and thick skin you are. And at the end of your shift or day, drink lots of beer.
Literally ties back into our last episode.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was kind of funny.
Everything from Superman syndrome to overindulgence as a way to cope. It's, I mean, and I'm sure it's half joking, but mm-hmm. at the same time, it's like, is it really though? Like jokes like that always seem to have like a seed of truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some other comments were, it takes thick skin to deal with what we deal with, but nobody has thick skin enough to keep out everything. The people who tell you need to grow a thicker skin and man up are the same people that go home and put a bullet in their head. And then, which is its own conversation.
Yeah. It's, I mean, those are two like very, like I've said, like the first one sounds more like it's mostly joking, The second one is a entire discussion that we could get into, and that would probably take up like a whole, like another episode of the podcast.
Right.
But definitely two like very like polarized takes on the same article.
I feel like there's a lot of ways you can go. And if you just, I mean, PTSD, we could talk about that for weeks.
Right.
So maybe we'll save that for later. Do have a good quote from one of the lovely people who submitted some stuff to us this week about mental health and being a first responder. And I want to share what she said. She said that being a first responder has intensely affected her mental health. After years of being a firefighter and an EMT and paramedic, I'm going to read it from her perspective. I have developed and been diagnosed with depression, anxiety, and PTSD. This is a result of cumulative stress and repeat exposure to traumatic events. I'm medicated daily to control my anxiety and also take a different medication as needed when I feel extra anxious or panicky. I still struggle often with my PTSD, and different types of emergency calls, even interactions with certain individuals, can spark flashbacks to some of those traumas I suffered, which I thought was exactly what, like, I couldn't have said it better, the way that she shared her experience and kind of what we've been talking about within this podcast.
It's one of those things that, like, it's the dark side of the moon, if you would, to being a first responder.
Yeah.
It's the part that no one ever talks about.
Right.
It's like, I think everyone, when we were getting these responses and getting this feedback, a lot of the responses basically, like, you can tell that, like, when these people started as first responders, they were all that classic, like, the kid with the twinkle in the eye. They wanted to do this they had an idea in their head of what this job was going to be when they started. Mm-hmm. And I feel like pretty quickly that idea definitely falls apart, and you start to realize the parts that no one wants to talk about, like the anxiety, the depression, the PTSD, the fact that if you're lucky, you'll have an employer that provides you an insurance plan decent enough that you can go to talk to a therapist about it.
I think you're absolutely right. Okay. Well, on that note, I'm going to transition into our subject at hand, which is the discussion of first responders that are in the LGBTQIA+, don't want to leave anybody out community. One of the first questions that we asked them was if they thought that the first responder community was welcoming to this population and diversity in general, I guess. I got a few different opinions back. I want to ask your opinion, Rose, before I read some of these and kind of see what you have to say.
Yeah, I honestly have always felt really welcomed by the first responder community, probably more so than a lot of other experiences that I've had or a lot of other communities that I've interacted with. So I feel kind of blessed that I had that opportunity. But that being said, I have also encountered a lot of, I'll just call it ignorance, in the sense of, because I am a lesbian, I think people feel the need to make jokes that pertain to me being a lesbian, that some of them are fine and relatable, and some of them are just borderline really inappropriate. And I think that really is the issue at hand for a lot of first responders, is knowing, you know, how far is too far and what is and isn't appropriate in this kind of setting.
I think a lot of that, and I've had my issues with this, is a lot of that goes to, like, the clubhouse, mm-hmm. like the boys club mentality of, like,
mm-hmm.
firehouses, ambulance companies, police departments. It's like there's so much almost like machismo.
Yeah.
I can't say that I've been in a similar position, obviously, but as someone that's definitely like a more on like the expressive side, even though I'm a straight guy, like someone that's more expressive and someone that definitely like I put more thought into the way that I look, and I have a more expressive voice and a higher pitch sometimes when I get excited. And you get like these people that feel the need to make jokes just because you're not the like boys club picture of like right. either like what a responder is or what a guy is or that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Do you think that plays into it a little bit with your side too?
I definitely think it does. And I think females in the first responder community in general are still in the middle of like paving their way. So mm-hmm. I think just adding on the whole lesbian part is kind of just quantifies the matter. But yeah, and I agree with you. It is very much a boys club. And like I said, we're still kind of forging our way. But I think being able to speak out about it and have some recognition are definitely good steps in moving forward.
I think the opinions that we gathered from everyone else on this topic were pretty much the same. It's just kind of that it's varied. The first responder community is very accepting of all different kinds of people, but you always have that person or those few people that ruin it or take it too far.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the feedback we got was about how it's all individual cases and it's just offensive terminology or, again, taking it too far. There wasn't an overall umbrella of negativity, mm-mm. which is great. I think we're actually ahead of other fields in that aspect.
I would agree.
Definitely. I was going to say, I think it's almost like I heard this terminology the other day and it made me like really think about it. I was watching a TV show, as I do a lot of, and the issue of accepting LGBTQAIP plus members came up, and it was, you can accept them intellectually, but do you accept people viscerally? You know, do you fully emotionally acknowledge that they are equal and deserve to be treated just as you do, like a human being? Like, it's something that I almost want to say it's sort of the same as like someone that's like, oh, I can't be racist, I have plenty of black friends.
Yeah,
it's like you can intellectually acknowledge that equality is important and that women deserve equal rights and equal treatment and that members of the LGBTQ community deserve equal treatment. But if you're not walking the walk at the same time as talking the talk, do you really though? You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true.
And I think a lot of it too has to do with educating people as to how to actually walk the walk. Because I've had a handful of partners, and I commented to Annalise about this when it would happen. So many partners that I would meet for the first time and they would find out I'm a lesbian and they'd say, oh, you know, some of our oldest friends are lesbians, or, you know, so-and-so's cousin is a lesbian and like stuff like that, which is like great. Like they're reaching out, they're attempting to be more comfortable. They're trying to make me more comfortable, which I appreciate. But at the end of the day, they could have maybe made some references, said some things, or post some crap on social media that says a different story. But like I said, they might, you know, just not realize that. Times are very quickly changing, and I think not everybody is kind of in tune with it nor wants to be in tune with it. So
when you hear people say like that sort of thing, like specifically like the, oh, our cousin's a lesbian, do you feel like it's more like their attempt to like kind of like wave a flag and say, hey, like I'm an ally, like don't worry about, like you don't have to worry about me? Or do you think it's more of like the thing where it's like, oh, I'm from Pennsylvania. And people are like, oh, my cousin's from Pennsylvania. Do you know him? And it's like, no, we don't all know each other.
I might be a little naive in this, but I always take it as them just trying to say, hey, like, that's cool. I can relate to you in this way.
Like, you know, the common ground.
Common ground.
I think that's what, from what it sounds like, I think that's what a lot of it is, too. Like, mm-hmm. And that's great.
I want to go back to what you said, Frank, about it being like a macho field. And I want to tie in the one response we got, and I'm going to read it. It says, in my experience, I think from the outside looking in and from a gay man's perspective specifically, it appears to be a masculine thing to be a firefighter. I wasn't out until I joined my second company. However, when joining, it can be intimidating, but I think that they are welcome of anyone who's willing to learn and put forth the effort and dedication to the company and the vocation. Showing dedication while being yourself is important in gaining their respect. For any queer person considering joining the emergency services, be prepared for questions and how to educate your crew. Also, don't be surprised if they ask questions, because as we all know, and he says, responders seem to have no filter whatsoever.
Which is so true.
It's so true. Do you think that's where a lot of, like, the filter specifically, do you think that's where a lot of, like, sideways comments come from, is just the fact that they don't know any better and they're not saying it like maliciously? they just don't understand that that's not okay?
Sometimes, yes, I do. I think that it's just like when I was growing up, it was a common thing to just be like, that's gay. Like anything that came up that you didn't agree with or you thought was weird or a little different and just be like, oh, that's gay.
Right.
But now that's, it's offensive to say that. And saying that's gay is just, it doesn't mean it's like any other slur word or anything like that. Not gay is not a slur word, but the way they're using it is kind of like a slur. It just,
right. It's not the word itself. It's the context of its use.
Yeah. And I think that there's a lot of people, that's the biggest thing encountered the most often is people, oh, that's gay. And you're just sitting there kind of like, I'm gay too. Do you want to talk about that? Or
I would always say that.
Yeah.
More often than I would make a comment and then be like, oh, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, well, yeah. I'm not mad. I'm just trying to make you aware of how stupid it sounds.
Yeah. Right. I do wonder if that's one of those things that we're going to look back on like 20 years from now or 30 years from now and realize like how just not okay it was, you know? Because I feel like using words outside of the connotation in that way is a relatively like modern thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, right. I don't think there was anyone like, I'd have to like pull up a list of like 1920s like terminology, but I don't think there was anyone in like the 1920s that was like misusing a word that represented like an entire community as an insult, you know? Like, I feel like it's a relatively modern thing.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I'm gonna shift over the same kind of topic, but talking about discrimination due to either identity or sexual orientation. I'm gonna read some of the submissions we have. A lot of people kind of agreed the same thing, that there isn't an instance that has impacted them personally, but they've seen it. They've seen other people. Our one submission was from an individual who's bisexual, and that person said that they don't really talk about it in work conversation. They're not hiding it. It just doesn't come up, and they just, you know, just want to be seen as a person.
Right. And I definitely get that. Like, as someone looking from the outside in, like, and you've said this to me a lot, Annalise. It's like you've never really like thought about it because it's always just been like who you were. Like it wasn't like you walked around with like a label. It's not like people saw you and were like, oh, there's that lesbian at Annalise. She's like, oh, there's Annalise. She likes this sport, and this is her favorite beer, and she also happens to be gay. You know?
Right. Yeah. Which is how it should be.
Right.
There are definitely instances, especially since we've talked about this episode in particular, where I've just looked back and been like you said, like, oh, maybe that wasn't so okay. Maybe that wasn't right what they said. But in the moment, you are just so concerned with being singled out or with the fallout of the conversation that you're just kind of like laugh along and are like, oh, yeah, that joke's so funny. But in reality, you're like, stop, this isn't okay.
Right.
Which also isn't okay, but...
I feel like since like we've been friends, my awareness has definitely shifted a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I explained this the other day to someone where it's like being completely apathetic to any like anything that affects like any community is kind of like the neutral, you know, like you're in the middle of the, you're not malicious, but you're also not like standing up and fighting for people and saying, hey, that's not okay to say, you know? Then there's like the people that are malicious, your Westboro Baptist Church people, why do they get an acronym people, that sort of thing.
Right.
And then there's people that like actually like have like will stand up and go like, hey, like what you're saying doesn't necessarily affect me, but I still need to tell you that it's not okay, you know? Like And I feel like you've definitely made me more aware of like when to say like when you hear something or something on social media and you're like, yeah, you're one of those people, like you're the malicious person, you know? Like before I was definitely a lot more apathetic to it.
Well, I'm glad I could help. No, but it's true. And I think that's one thing I personally need to work on related to this is I need to work on like finding my voice and being more like standing up more and just saying like, that's not okay. Or maybe I wouldn't prefer if you did that, but it's been
just like the stigma with mental health, there's such a stigma with this. It's kind of like, especially a lot of the people that I hang around or work around or am friends with are all military or ex-military, and don't ask, don't tell. Mm-hmm. That was a big part for a lot of them. And yeah, just the whole idea of it's okay if you're gay. I don't care if you're gay. I don't care what your preferences are, but don't talk about it, or let's not talk about what you did on Saturday, or those kind of things.
Which right.
It's just you get, almost just as bad.
Right. Or you get, like, I hear this one all the time. There's like the straight guy that's convinced that just because someone's gay means they're going to hit on him, where it's like, I don't care if you're gay or not, just don't hit on me.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, and it's all, if the people that say that always seem to be the ones that don't understand, like, unwanted passes when it comes to them, like to women, mm-hmm. you know, like those are always mm-hmm. the same people that also, like, don't seem to see a problem with, like, catcalling, or don't yep. fully understand consent. They're the yep. ones that, like, I saw a meme and it was like, there's like an entire group of men that don't understand consent until they're in a gay bar.
Yeah.
Like, they don't understand, like, that no means no, or when it's time to stop bothering someone, until mm-hmm. like the topic of, like, someone being gay comes up and they're like, well, just don't hit on me.
Yeah. So I'm gonna share some of those submissions. The first one is, it's common for people in the first responder community to counter stress and difficult situations with humor, which some refer to as dark or crude humor. I've heard individuals make comments before some would be considered to be borderline or actual sexual harassment, which I want to come back to later. Mm-hmm. Also, this one said, I've had several men make comments to me before about being a lesbian. They have never been malicious or discriminatory, but most times it becomes annoying to hear, kind of like we were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I can almost always counter their comments and make them stop. I've been denied admission to fire classes because it would be too hard for a girl to do. And nobody admits it, but it's generally evident that there is discrimination because I'm a female, not specifically because I'm a lesbian. Which I thought was interesting and a whole nother topic for us to get into on another time.
Yeah.
But another one said, if anything, I feel in certain situations I have to prove myself more. Once people recognize that I was dedicated and willing to learn, it hasn't held me back from getting promotions or growing within my company. And then another one that says, now from the public while working in EMS, I have been called a faggot more times than I can count. I've had a patient refuse treatment from me, and a medic had to treat a BLS patient. Which brings me into one of the areas where I think I've had the most discrimination at work has been with patients, not with coworkers. Actually, there have been multiple times where, especially right after I got engaged to Rose, mm-hmm. I think, I don't know if I just, like, purposely showed my left hand more, or I don't know what it was, but very soon after, I got a lot of questions like, oh, are you getting married? Oh, I like your ring. What's your fiance's name? What does he do? Where does he work? What is he into? And I just ever so kindly be like, well, actually, my fiance is a girl, or I have, now it's a wife or then a girlfriend. And you get two responses, mostly. You either get the one that's like, oh, that's so exciting, which I've noticed out here versus more so when I live back east. Mm-hmm. Or you would get the, oh, okay. And then they change the subject really quickly. Or
right.
Just the general, like, yeah, no, that's not okay.
Have you ever seen just that straight, like, someone be bold enough to just, like, immediately change their whole demeanor and just, like, disrespect you after finding that out? Multiple or is it times. Usually more of, like, the second one?
Multiple times. I've, on more than one occasion, had a patient tell me I just hadn't met the right man yet. I've been told that I maybe just don't think I'm pretty enough to find a boy, so I settled for my friend. I've been told, I don't know, Rose, have you...
I actually haven't experienced that much discrimination from patients or their families, to be honest.
It just speaks to the diversity
this. Yeah.
Well. Yeah. And we've run at multiple similar companies and stuff. So
that's
good. The absolute audacity someone has to have to, like, like I told you about an experience I had like last week or so with someone just outright like expressing like just not okay views. Mm-hmm. And this goes along the same thing. It's like it's one thing to like hold those thoughts in private and like to like express those feelings in private conversation. It's a whole nother thing to have the audacity to just like say that to someone's face.
Yeah.
And I feel like it tells me that like they obviously haven't had much life experience with people from that community because they haven't had someone like call, like obviously like the industries that we work in are like 50% customer service that you can't like just offend a patient.
Right.
But like they obviously haven't like encountered someone outside of the first responder community that was in that community that hasn't called them on it, you know?
Right. Yeah, it's a shame.
Yeah. But that the fact that you have experienced that a lot and Rose hasn't so much definitely shows like just the diversity of experiences. I mean, even looking at like the responses we got back from people, it shows just how diverse of an experience everyone has in life.
Absolutely. I also just think it's a testament to our field as a whole. Just, we never really see anyone on their best days. We never really see anyone when good things are happening to them and they're excited to see us. No one ever is excited to see us for the right reasons. So I don't know if some of the reactions are just the way that their stress is manifesting or the way that they can fixate on that because it's not their problem currently that's going on with them. So it's easier to talk about. I don't know. Doesn't make it any more right, but.
Right. It doesn't make it any more right, but it's like at the same, it's like you kind of like, would you say like you feel less like offended by it? Like if you look at it from that perspective, like obviously it's still not okay, but you kind of think like, well, maybe they were just having a bad day, you know?
I think that I definitely do that to try and rationalize it for my own feelings and well-being, but I definitely don't think it has a different effect because either way, you're still just burying at the end of the day that someone made you feel bad for being yourself and it's something that you should hide. I think a common theme across people in this community is that, not the first responder community, but that we feel like we can't be who we are and we have to feel guilty or... like, we have to hide who we are because it offends other people. And I think that that's ridiculous, but we do it.
Yeah, actually, I was actually just about to ask if you felt like you've been in positions a lot where, like, it's easier to just not bring it up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it's easier to just not mention that you're engaged or that you're married.
People in the leasing office here think we're sisters.
Well, that's in part to me just being too chicken shit to say anything otherwise because it's ingrained in me that it's like, you know, a not normal thing and just kind of like it's hard to speak up and be like, no, actually we're not sisters, we're engaged. Right. And like I'm proud as heck to be married to this woman, but you know, it's still just buried so deep down in my mind from just years of experiencing this that it's something to be kind of ashamed about.
Yeah.
Would you say that you've felt like, this is a question for both of you guys, that you felt like you can be more open about it now that you're in a state that's a lot more, in a region of the country, honestly, that's a lot more like accepting of it and a lot more like open about it as opposed to being back here in the cold, frigid Northeast where we're all angry and bitter all the time?
I absolutely think so. At work especially, I think that, I mean, I'm in the same field. I'm just in a different aspect of it. And I think that every single person I've corrected and been like, well, actually my wife, they've been so accepting. They also never knew me before I was married. So it just kind of is the way it is.
Right.
I think we live in Seattle and it's just like such an open and welcoming community for a lot of, it's a millennial city. First of all, it's also just filled with such a diverse population of people that have moved here from other countries, from other parts of the countries. It's just kind of like a transplant city. And the one thing that I can really appreciate about here is that there just seems to be less judgment overall. Everyone just kind of follows their own style, follows their own path. It's such like a startup city, and I don't think being gay is abnormal here at all. Actually, one of the first times we went out for drinks with some of my coworkers one day, we went to this bar, and Rose and I were looking around, and I texted my friend and I was like, did you pick this bar because it's a lesbian bar? Because everyone here is a lesbian. And she's like, nope, that's just a normal Seattle bar.
That sounds like it's like the perfect city to be in. I mean, like you said, with it being a transplant city, there are so many people, I'm sure, from like different walks of life, whether it be like their gender identity or their sexual orientation or their race or their religion, that you can count on people being a lot more open and accepting. And also there's probably a whole lot of really good like takeout places.
Yeah, I really enjoy being out here. And I think one of the first things that really kind of stunned me was I think it was probably the same event. We were actually going out with our friends for coworkers. Mm-hmm. And I think we were just talking to them about, you know, kind of our experiences back home with being gay. And they were kind of just appalled that that was something that we, you know, the things that we had gone through, And it was like, it got to a point where like, I feel kind of annoying being like, oh my gosh, it's so amazing being out here. We're so accepted. Everybody's gay. Like, I love this, blah, blah, blah. Like they're like, we get it. Like, you're gay. Like, that's how I feel. Like, they just don't care that much that it's like, it's just a normal thing. And to me, I'm still just catching up.
We're both just catching up. Yeah. I feel like that's been a big theme since we've moved here, is just kind of like becoming more our genuine selves.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Which is a shame. Everyone should be able to experience that no matter where they are.
Yeah. But that's, you're literally living what I would call like the new American dream. Like, you found a city where you can be open. You can be 100% who you are, mm-hmm. and not have to worry about like any sort of judgment for it.
Yeah.
And I think when people talk about the American dream nowadays, like, that's the dream that, yeah, like, I hear people talking about from other countries. Like, and it's a shame when I hear people from other countries talk about that, because I'm like, well, we're getting there.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you want that, stick to like the West Coast and like the like far northeast, like close to Canada.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yep. We're making our way down south.
One city at a time.
Yeah. I mean, there's Atlanta. I just got back from Atlanta.
Not to say that there aren't a lot of progressive places in the south. There are. Yeah.
So, not to bring it back down, because I feel like we just got to a really like happy, lighthearted part. But I want to talk about go back to sexual harassment and like the kind of joking in first responders, because I feel like that's the biggest outlet of discrimination that we have in our field. Uh-huh. I think it goes back to what we said earlier about just that dark humor and that crude humor and people not knowing where the line is. And I think sometimes people do know where the line is. They just toe the line, or they test the waters and see what they can do to kind of push the limits. I know, Bros, I know you've had an experience with this specifically.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I did. And I look back at it now and I wish I had reacted differently. There was definitely one of those moments where I should have been like, hey, you're not even, I'm not even going to say it. Hey, this isn't okay. Like, I don't know what made you think that was an okay thing to say. Like, we're surrounded by a group of people, all primarily female, and you just said this incredibly derogatory comment about me being a lesbian and female. So, like, you know, but me being me, I was like, ha ha ha, I doubt it, you know, whatever, and brushed it off. But now as I look back, I'm like, wow, that really wasn't okay. Wow, that was a time I really should have opened my mouth. And it's just a matter of kind of, I feel like a lot of times when you're the minority and you open your mouth and stand up, a lot of times people tend to get in groups and say, no, you're wrong. And then it makes you never want to say anything ever again. So I guess that's probably what I was fearing at the time. But I think I've learned since then to know a little better and realize that it's worth it. And I'll take a couple negative comments my way if it's worth standing up for what's right.
Have you seen and experienced that the majority of people that you've corrected or had to correct have you seen like that they've shifted their attitude and corrected themselves, or was it more of that the negative comments and kind of brushed it off sort of thing?
It's actually kind of funny. I've only had one time where I really was like, wow, that was pretty inappropriate. And my coworker was more, and the other people that were standing there were, seemed to be more appalled by what had happened than I was. Like, I was there like, okay, that you probably shouldn't have said that, but like, whatever. And then the other people were like, wow, like, do you want me to tell someone? Like, do you, you know, like that kind of thing. So I think that was an interesting scenario for the person who was like personally victimized, so to speak, to have a lesser reaction than those other male counterparts around her.
But that speaks to how this has almost been normalized.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And at least I remember when we first started working together, when we first met, it seemed like for like the first, like this wrong, but it seemed like for like the first week, you were almost kind of testing the waters with all of us. See, like, I noticed for a while you kept referring to Rose as your significant other. And I mean, like, as someone that, like, knows how to, like, as someone that knows kind of how to read people,
yeah,
I kind of figured, like, I assumed there was some sort of reason that you weren't saying, like, my husband or my wife or my boyfriend or my girlfriend.
Yeah, I think, well, specifically that time period in my life, Rose and I were engaged, so she was my fiance, and saying fiance already sounds like weird and pretentious and awkward, and it feels weird to say that. But then
it's those also dang French words, man.
But there's also no gender to the word fiance unless it's written. So mm-hmm. When you say that, people just automatically interpret it as your male fiance, which after going through the time period where I referred to her as my girlfriend was like weird because you could say girlfriend and people knew what you meant.
Right.
So it was almost backtracking. And on top of that, coming into the job that we worked together, it was the first time I had started with an employer where I didn't already know a lot of the people that worked there mm-hmm. in this field. Because I feel like we work in such a small world field. Like everyone knows everyone, or everyone knows everyone's uncle, or just that kind of thing.
Yeah,
it was definitely the first time that I was starting a job within that time period in my life where people didn't already know who I was. So they didn't already know Rose and our situation. And it was true. I just wasn't sure how well it would be received. And knowing mm-hmm. that I had to spend all this time locked in a room with you guys, I wanted to make sure that it was going to be a good situation.
And I'd say it worked out because it ended up like, I don't think there has been a more diverse like group of people coming through the doors of that facility before or since.
No, I think you're absolutely right.
Like we were just kind of this huge like mixed bag of life experiences, which was great because yeah. we all came from completely different like means, backgrounds, financial points, like gender identities, races. Like mm-hmm. we all had this huge like difference in life experiences, and somehow we all just kind of clicked and got along.
Yeah, that was probably one of the best working experiences I've had. I feel bad that I keep having to bring this back down, but
it's fine.
The examples that we had for this category that I do want to speak about because I think they're important because it's something that a lot of people do deal with.
Mm-hmm.
The first one says, only one call is coming to mind when I think of discrimination, and it was while working EMS. The teenage patient called me a faggot multiple times, spit on me. It escalated as far as my medic requesting police to come to the hospital, and the patient was actually handcuffed for the entirety of the rest of their encounter, which it's sad when someone gets worked up so much over that they have to be detained by the police.
It's sad, and it's also horrifying. Like,
yeah.
Like, I can't imagine how, like, I mean, even if you're a tougher individual, you know, even if you're someone that could hold their own, like, physically, like, going up against someone, working, like, we're such a vulnerable profession as mm-hmm. medical, like, responders.
Yeah.
We're such a vulnerable profession because we're the one, like, firefighters have, like, this aura of being, like, the tough, like, the men with the crowbars and the axes and the fire hose. And police, I mean, like, even if they don't have the aura, they have, like, the means to back it up. They're the right. ones with the guns and the handcuffs. And, yeah, we're the ones, we don't wear body armor. We don't carry guns. Right. There's usually only two of us. there's usually only one of us in the back with the patient. So I can't imagine. Right. I can't imagine like someone being so in, like someone being so like enraged that they start attacking you or trying to fight you because of your sexual identification.
Yeah. Like, something that means nothing to them. Like their life is going to go on just the same. No matter who the person taking care of them, like calls at the end of the night to say goodnight.
Right. And it's like, there's only two of you in the back of that, in the back of that truck. Who is he, like, it's like, who is he showing off for? Or who is the patient showing off for, you know? Like, it's not like there's a crowd watching. It's just you and him. At that point, it's like pure maliciousness. Like, they just want to like mess with you, I feel like.
Yeah. It's a shame.
Yeah.
The other example I have, there's only one time was I physically harassed or assaulted without my consent. A male firefighter in my department cornered me in the firehouse when others were not immediately nearby, and he made lewd comments and reached his hand up my shirt. I had to push him away and leave. I never reported it because this person was embarrassed and was concerned about how others would perceive their accusation, and there were also no witnesses, which is awful.
Yeah, that's equally horrifying. I'm sure, especially like for you guys, like that's like if you looked up sexual harassment in a workplace in a dictionary, that's the scenario that's like right, that would be right next to it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that that person didn't feel comfortable reporting it too just shows like how far we have to go as a profession still. Like the fact that we still don't fully understand or don't pay attention to the like what's crossing the line. And then, like, on the receiving end, when it happens to us, we don't acknowledge it and don't, like, fully comprehend, no, that was sexual harassment, and I need to report it to someone because that was totally not okay.
Yeah, it's awful. There, I didn't intend on talking about this, but I'm going to because we're on the subject. But before I left to move here, my last EMS job back home, about a month before I moved, I had a similar situation happen to me. Not the same situation, but a similar inappropriate sexual advance situation. And I, in all of these situations in the past, I've never spoken up because I just didn't, like this example, didn't want to deal with it. There weren't witnesses. There wasn't, you know, anyone to go on. You didn't want all the stigma of everything that would get said about you if you did speak up for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually, after talking to Rose, spoke up for myself and went to the chief of our ambulance company and talked to some of the officers there and ended up talking to a lawyer and moving forward to take action against this individual. And it got down to the point where they him and hauled and pushed it until the week I was moving to come here, and then said, we'll discuss this further if you face him face to face and you guys discuss your sides of the story.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Sorry. I just want to clarify that the company I worked for went above and beyond. They were all very receptive, made changes, were very fantastic. I was very pleased. It was the entity that the other individual was from. Just wasn't as cooperative.
Right.
And it's a shame because they are also a first responder organization. They also have vulnerable individuals that work for them that could be in the same position, because this person is getting away with this again and again and again. And I know firsthand that I'm not the first person that something like this happened to with that individual.
I was just about to say that, that you have to wonder, like, if they were so bold that they thought they could get away with this with you, how many other people were before and how many other people will be after if they get away with it?
Right. And that's why I spoke up, because Rose was still working there. And if anything happened because I didn't speak up, and everyone else that worked there, but obviously my most immediate reaction goes to her. That like,
really? Why?
Like,
do you have some sort of vested interest in her?
Maybe.
It's like, God, it's like you two are married or something.
But yeah, if I just don't think I could have been okay with if this situation arose again and I didn't do what I could to stop it. So, but it's the same thing. You just... It's hard to speak up. It's hard to say something. It's hard to feel justified in defending yourself. It's sad.
Yeah. I feel like more needs to be done in workplaces, specifically in like the first responder workplace. And it's difficult because we all know each other. We're all best friends, like for the most, like speaking in general terms, like we all like we go out to grab drinks after work, we go out to dinner, we're like at each other's like weddings and birthday parties. It's difficult, especially I'm sure like for supervisors, to like batten down the hatches and like really like crack down on this, because it's like they have personal relationships with a lot of times both the offended party and the offender, you know.
Yeah,
but there needs to be more steps taken, I feel like, as far as like reporting goes. Like,
right,
it should not be mandatory that like if you launch a complaint against someone that you have to meet your attacker or your aggressor like face to face. Like, that's borderline like victim shaming to me, you know?
Yeah,
like it's remarkable in a lot of these situations that people work up the courage just to report it.
Right.
And now you're asking them to get into the same realm with someone that made them feel uncomfortable, someone that touched them inappropriately, someone that made inappropriate comments to them, someone that assaulted them. I mean, let's just call it what it is. It's assault. You know? Oh, it's a crime.
Yeah. It's like, I feel as if because we all just accept the jokes and the crude humor and we all laugh along, that it almost makes the physicality of some of these situations like lesser for some people. Like in their minds, they're like, oh, well, I took all those jokes and I laughed about this and that, so they probably just thought it would be okay. And that's not okay.
It's not.
Even the jokes most of the time probably aren't okay. And we're all a little guilty of towing the line, I think.
Right. I put that in the same category as like when you hear like, when you hear these court cases against rapists, and the lawyers for like the defendant's lawyer has the like gall to say, well, she was wearing a short dress and she flirted with him earlier that night, so he probably thought it was just okay.
Yeah.
No. Well, yes means yes. No means no. Anything short of a yes is a no.
I had to give a disposition to the lawyers involved in this when I was going through my situation. And the lawyer for the other entity actually asked me what I was wearing when this happened. And I was like, well, I was at work, so I was wearing my work uniform.
But the fact that that even came up, like,
right. Like what, but what do you think, what does that have to do with anything?
Right. Like I can only imagine like what they would have said, like if it happened to be your day off and you came in like wearing like a dress or wearing a t-shirt and shorts or something, like, you know, like the stereotypical like outfit that all these like disgusting lawyers will go for and say like, oh, like, well, clearly she was asking for it or something like vile like that.
Yeah, it's sad.
Yeah, for someone who hasn't been affected by this, I'm being a little ranty, but at the same time I think about like the fact that like I think of you and Rose as sisters to me. I think of like as someone that has a sister that I care about, as someone that just like is a decent human being, like the fact that there's people that think that it's okay to get away with this just disgusts me.
Yeah, it's awful. So
if I'm being a little ranty, feel free to let me know. But
no, you're fine. I absolutely agree with and appreciate everything you've said. And I think it's important because you are the straight male on the other side. You know, you're, no one else has any excuse to be any less than what, as forthcoming and like open as you've been, if that makes sense.
I just think it's just being a decent person, you know, like it's all at the end of the day, it's like they're like, we're all trapped here on this tiny like blue ball floating through space. Why can't we just be decent to each other on a daily basis? Like it literally costs nothing to not be a sleaze bag. it literally takes zero effort. I feel like it takes more effort to be a disgusting human being than it does to just leave people alone if you don't have anything nice to say, you know?
You're right. On that note, I want to share one last question that we asked from the awesome people who sent us their stories and thoughts. And the question was, what do you want people to know about the LGBTQIAP+ community? And these are the responses we got. That we're just humans. We aren't weird or different just because we have preferences about who we love and or identify a certain way. We're just like straight people. At the end of the day, we're no different from anyone else who decides to be crazy and put on fire gear or respond to any type of incident, whether it be police, fire, EMS. We just want to help people. And then there's also this statement, which I think was pretty good, which is, if you're a queer person who's considering or even has the urge to join the emergency services, do it. It's worth a try and worth putting your best foot forward. The experience has been one of the most rewarding in my life, and I love every minute of it. Just know, stepping into this field, people don't have a filter, and you have to earn their respect. Be dedicated, engaged, and involved. I'm writing this as a very open, pretty obviously gay male who is an assistant fire chief. It can be done, and you can be successful. Just be who you are while also being one of the guys. And I don't think I could say that any better than he did. Yeah. So. That's awesome. Yeah.
I think this podcast has been really important. I know it's been really important to you, and it's been really important to me too, especially with this month, because yeah. It's important for, like, I remember growing up how like proud I felt when I saw like black firefighters or black police officers or black EMTs. And I can only imagine like how important it feels for like someone that's a member of the LGBT community, knowing that there are people in this community that are open about their lifestyles and open about the community that they belong to. There are plenty of people like me who, while we may not be part of that community, will damn sure stand side by side for you and like fight for you if someone like gets out of pocket. And there's plenty of people like you in the community. You can do it, you know? And that's if any of our listeners are listening to this and take away anything, I think that's the thing that I want people to walk away with, knowing that for all of the gripes that we've had about the profession in the last 60 minutes, it's getting better. And for every horrible person, there's three people that are willing to stand side by side with you and go toe to toe with that horrible person.
Yeah. And please, if you are listening, please share your stories or your questions or your comments. We both are very passionate about this and would love to interact more and talk more about it and hear what you have to say.
Absolutely. And for people that don't know, we now have the official Latibule Instagram and Facebook page, which any comments that you have or any questions that you have, feel free to message either one of those. And if you'd like, we'll address it on the podcast, or we can address it in a message replying to you. It can be as anonymous or as unanonymous as you'd like it to be. So feel free to reach out.
I want to thank again, Heather, Ashley, and Michael, all for sharing their experiences and their stories and their opinions and thoughts, because I think that this is a topic where it's really important to get a diverse perspective and really see how this has affected different people in different settings. And I think they did a great job of sharing their experiences.
Thanks again, everyone. Seriously, we understand how hard it is to like, even if you're open, how hard it is to like be asked to like share your thoughts for virtually the entire internet to hear.
Right.
So it takes a lot of courage, and we really thank all of you.
And also Rose.
Yep. Thank you, Rose.
Thank you for hanging out with us today and sharing your thoughts and feelings and.
Everyone, this has been Frank and Annalise. Annalise and Frank with the Laudable Podcast. Thanks for listening. See you guys.
Bye. Bye.